honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, let me welcome all of you present in these public hearings. And firstly, let me apologize that we are starting slightly late. It was because this is quite a big institution and there are too many things that have to be attended to. There was an urgent matter that we had to attend. In today's proceedings, we have quite a tight program which will deal with people that have responded to the invitations that we have issued out there pertaining to the subject matter of the implementation of the mining charter. We have about 28 institutions that would want to raise their own views pertaining to progress made, pertaining to problems encountered in the process of the implementation of the mining charter. As a result of that interest generated, we then spread these public hearings starting today, continuing on Friday. We're hoping to finish them off next week on Wednesday. And we understand the reason why there are so many interests. This is one of an important matter in the mining industry where you deal with the transformation of the mining sector. We all are aware that the constitution of the country enjoins us all to develop our natural resources, which include mineral resources, in an ecological manner, and that we develop them for the benefit of all South Africans. We're going to be testing today, as we have done in Northwest and in Limpopo, when we were handling the public hearings, listening to the mining communities, to the workers and other interested groupings, to test whether that provision in the Constitution is indeed observed by all those that are supposed to be implementing. Secondly, the MPRDA instructs the minister that within 5 years of the promulgation of that act, which was 2004, he or she must draft and establish a mining charter, which is what was done. The mining charter we had running from 2004 to 2009 had 7 pillars within it, and that the Department of Mineral Resources has therefore rightfully conducted the assessment of the impact of the mining charter within the society in the country, and their results were made public, and indeed what we have found there is not pleasing. It's a picture which is quite disturbing, that there has been very little transformation in the mining industry. And as a result of that assessment report, the department and the ministry therefore embarked on the amendments of the mining charter. Hence today we have an amended version of the mining charter, still in line with the targets that were set in the earlier one, in the 2004 charter, But indeed, being strengthened in terms of the implementation, in terms of the reporting and so forth. We're happy because that was the product of the tripartite structure, where you had the government, you had business, you had labor putting their heads together, coming up with that amended version of the mining charter. But because that charter goes beyond those three structures, it became necessary for us to then engage mining communities and other interested stakeholders and create space for them to basically tell us whether they feel the impact of the mining charter, whether they even understand that there is an amended version of the mining charter. We're hoping that in the course of these 3 days, we will then listen to people that are participating in the industry, and they will be giving us their views. After which, as the portfolio committee, we will then take our own decision in terms of whether the amended version goes far enough, whether that version does address the challenges that we have in the country. Let's face it that the mining industry has played quite a pivotal role in the industrialization in this country since the discovery of minerals in the 18th century. But the question that keeps on coming up is, we as the country are faced with ever-rising levels of poverty as we speak. And the question is there a role that should be played by the mining sector? And is there a manner in which we could use differently the natural resources that are God-given? Coupled with the rising levels of poverty, you have a challenge of inequality in this country. It is a known factor that we have been declared by Gini coefficient that we are the world's most unequal society throughout the world. And indeed, those gaps continue to increase as we speak. And therefore, in the process of the transformation debates within the mining industry, we need to therefore interrogate what role should be played by the mining industry going forward in assisting the country to close that gap. The third challenge is that of high levels of unemployment. We know that mining in the good days has made quite serious impact in terms of employment levels in the country. And we are now seeing that there is a steady decline in terms of the actual numbers of people that are employed in the industry. Is there any strategy that we can look at? Is there something that can be done for the mining industry to make a contribution in terms of the national goal of creating 5 million jobs into the future? So in that the total sum, we will be therefore opening this platform for people to talk about transformation and also bearing in mind these national challenges that we have got, taking into account the reports that I hope that also the department is going to repeat for us today. With those few words, tracing back our standpoint on this matter, we would like to start with the Department of Mineral Resources, listen to their presentation in terms of the implementation of the mining charter. Introduce yourselves and let us allow you to talk to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for providing the department with the opportunity to come and make the presentation and make some input in terms of the process that's currently being conducted by the portfolio committee. My name is Andre Andreas. I'm a director responsible for mineral policy and legislation development. I am accompanied by our acting DDG, Mr. Nell, and Mr. Rendani Mutige, as well as Ms. Nolutando Nkosi, and our parliamentary liaison officer. Our colleagues from Mineral Regulation are also joining us in a few minutes. They will deal with the issues relating to implementation. As I said previously, good morning to the members of the Portfolio Committee, colleagues, the press, and as well as stakeholders from the various sectors in the mining sector. I think the chairperson has, to a large extent, dealt with some aspects of my presentation, which primarily deals with the assessment that was conducted and the subsequent amendment to the charter. The presentation will basically also look at the elements, the new element that has been inserted into the amended charter, sustainable development, the scorecard, which is a shift from the previous scorecard that we had in the mining charter, as well as the reporting templates. And then I'll simply conclude with what, in the view of the department, is the way in which we should be moving to ensure greater compliance with the mining charter and other prescripts of our regulatory framework. As the chairperson has already outlined, Section 102A of the MPRPA makes provision for the minister to develop the charter, which was done in consultation with mining sector stakeholders. In 2002, the MPRPA was promulgated in 2004. 5 years means that in 2009, the minister then had to review the mining charter with the mining sector stakeholders, which was done. In 2008, as was already hinted to previously, we appointed an independent service provider to do an assessment in terms of progress, whether we were making progress in terms of the elements that were there, and then look at the targets and then give the department a report back on how far we were, whether we had to review and amend the charter, or whether we were making significant progress in terms of the target set, which would obviate a review and amendment of the charter. Sadly, the assessment yielded the following results. First of all, in terms of beneficiation, the levels of beneficiation were not aligned to the levels that were provided for by Section 26 of the MPRDA and the Mining Charter. In terms of employment equity, the assessment further revealed that only 37% of mining companies have in fact developed employment equity plans. Further, fell under employment equity, only 26% of companies achieved a threshold of 40% of HDSA participation at management level. HDSA, historically disadvantaged South Africans. In terms of mine community and rural development, the assessment revealed that only 49% of companies participated in the formulation of integrated development plans. Social and labor plans, SLPs, were not implemented as per the applications of the various right holders. Housing and living conditions. Only 26% of companies provided housing for the employees, and a mere 29% improved on existing standards of housing. Procurement. 89% of companies have not given companies preferred supplier status. Members will recall that in terms of the old mining charter, there was a provision that you had to declare HDSA suppliers, you know, give them a preferred supplier status to ensure that they were able to sustain themselves in terms of the business that they were, the services that they were providing to mining companies. 80%, I'm still under procurement, 80% of companies have not committed to the progression of procurement from HDSA companies over the three to five year time frame as provided by the old mining charter. Further, the reported levels of procurement from HDSA companies only averaged 37% of companies. under ownership and joint ventures, this is where I think is the crux of the of where the we believe the problem rests. BE ownership on aggregate was only at 9%. In fact, it was 8.9 or even much. There are various percentages flying around. Some believe that some verification agencies believe it's much lower than that. It's some put it at less than 5%. Some funding models packaged such that they coincided with or go beyond the life of the mine, which in itself is problematic because it would mean that the BE partner would be settled with debt even once the mine is closed. BE partners were to pay off their debts through dividends. It was also found that there was no value in the hands of the BE partners at the end of the payment of the debt. HRD, there was a disproportionate inhibition that exists against progress on skills development and further a disconnect between plans that were submitted to the DMR when the right holder applied for the right and the actual implementation of what the right holder actually did in terms of HRD issues. Those are the results that we yielded in terms of the assessment that was conducted by the department. What we now would like to focus on or draw the attention of the portfolio committee to, as well as the stakeholders, is the process that then led to the amendment of the charter, using those the review and the assessment report. The review was basically aimed at strengthening and sharpening the effectiveness of the charter. If you look at the language that was used in the old charter, it was a bit, in some instances, vague ambiguous without being clear and exact in terms of what the outcome should be and what the target should be. And that is what we tried to do with the amended charter, with the assistance of stakeholders. As the chairperson has already alluded to, this was a process that was driven primarily through the MIGDET processes, where labour as well as organised business is also involved, and various other sector stakeholders. While sharpening the effectiveness of the charter, we made a point of ensuring that. Making the point that transformation is closely linked to ensuring that the industry remains competitive. We wouldn't want to lose the competitive edge that the industry enjoys by looking at transformation in a manner that will lead to the destruction or the collapse of the mining sector. The amended charter basically seeks to achieve that through the implementation of the following elements. The first one is then the crucial one is the one on ownership. The previous target was set at 15%, as I've already indicated. The report revealed that we achieved a result of less than 9%, 8.9%. The new target is 26% of HDS ownership by 2014. Offsetting is permissible against the value of beneficiation. There is an error there on the slide. It's supposed to be only from 2012. I do apologize for that, Chairperson. The modalities in terms of the beneficiation that I just referred to are being worked on currently. The beneficiation strategy was just approved by Cabinet 2 months ago. The beneficiation unit within the DMR is looking at the modalities and ensuring that an implementation plan is available when 2012 kicks in. Procurement and enterprise development, the new provisions basically make provision for a minimum of 40% capital goods by 2014, 70% of services by 2014, which need to be procured from BE entities, 50% of consumer goods also by 2014, and a contribution of 0.5% of annual income by multinational suppliers of capital goods, which should be paid into a social fund, to be utilized for the development and improvement of mind communities. Beneficiation. Companies are then directed to facilitate local beneficiation by adhering to Section 26 of the MPRDA, which makes provision for the levels of beneficiation by specific companies, as well as give effect to the beneficiation strategy, which I've already alluded to has since been approved by Cabinet. The offset value of the level of beneficiation against portion of the HDS ownership should not exceed 11%. Employment equity. Companies are directed to achieve a minimum of 40% HDSA demographic representation by 2014 at the following levels. Executive management, which basically is your board level. Senior management, which speaks to executive, your executive level posts. Core and critical skills, middle management, and junior management. We are aware that most companies, I suppose, are likely to exceed the 40% level at junior management level, because I suppose that's where most of the HDSA employees are at this stage. Could we continue with the employment equity requirements? Companies are then directed to request to fast-track their existing talent pools to ensure a higher level of exposure to the operation of companies, and couple that with the career path programs that are developed in the various companies. Human resource development. Industry has undertaken to invest a percentage of their annual payroll in essential skills development, which should reflect the demographics of the country as follows. And there the percentages are given 3% by 2010. This is of their total annual payroll, 3.5% by 2011, 4% by 2012, ending with 5% by 2014. That is by no means a small amount if you look at what the total annual turnover of some of the mining companies are. It is a substantial contribution that will be made into the skills development of the employees of various mines. Mine community development, this is an issue also that I suppose we had to look at because of the various concerns that were raised by communities through various forums as well as through the portfolio committee. Mining companies are directed to adhere to international best practices and guidelines, to invest in community consultative and collaborative processes, and make sure that this is done prior to the implementation of mining projects. The assessment also, what the assessment report revealed is that communities were primarily unhappy with the projects that were undertaken by companies in the various areas where they were mines, in the sense that they felt they were largely not involved in the earlier consultation processes, and that projects were undertaken without them being involved in that process. And these community upliftment projects were at times did not enjoy the support of the majority of the communities in which those projects were then undertaken. Mining companies are further then directed to conduct assessments to determine the developmental needs in consultation with mine communities, and identify projects for contribution towards community development in line with their IDPs. Housing and living conditions. Companies are directed to improve the standards of housing and living conditions for mine workers as follows. What is important is to note the commitments that were agreed upon by the mining companies, that they would convert upgrade hostels into family units by 2014, the occupancy rate of one person by room by 2014 would also be achieved, and further facilitate home ownership by miners in consultation with labor by 2014. That we believe is a milestone in terms of what stakeholders agree to leading up to the signing of the amended mining charter. It's something I think that the tripartite alliance can be proud of. The new element that was introduced in the amended mining charter is the element that deals with sustainable development and growth in the mining industry. Mining companies undertook to implement elements of sustainable development, commitments that were made in the stakeholders declaration, which was signed in June 2010, just before the World Cup. Stakeholders undertook to improve on environmental management, as well as improve on the industry's health and safety performance. Mining companies further also undertook to utilize assay-based facilities for analysis of samples across mining value chains. This last provision was included to look at issues such as job creation and how we could revive the an industry that seems to be on the decline, where samples are primarily now, or should I say, regularly sent abroad for analysis. This could be done internally. In the country, instead of sending the samples abroad, and through that process, then creating much-needed jobs in the country. The reporting and monitoring and evaluation of compliance. Members of this House will note that we've also now included Section 47 of the MPRDA. We've made reference to Section 47 in the amended mining charter. I think this is in line with the shift by the department from a processing of applications to a more enforcement and compliance role that we're looking to play within the mining sector and ensure that there's a greater level of compliance by mining sector companies. I also make reference there to Section 99, which basically deals with the penalties as provided for in the MPRDA for non-compliance. We now moved away from looking at progress against the elements on a five-year basis. Companies are now required to report progress against the targets on an annual basis. So we're looking at annually reporting compliance with the mining charter, as opposed to the previous provision in the old mining charter. As most of the members are probably now aware, there is a process underway of reviewing the MPRDA, as well as various other pieces of legislation that is being administered by the department. We're looking at beefing up the penalty provisions that may be imposed on mining companies for non-compliance to serve as a deterrent and ensure that there is greater compliance by mining companies with the provisions of not only the mining charter, but with the MPRDA as well. Chairperson, thanks. I think that is the presentation from the department. My colleagues from Mineral Regulation has also joined us now. So, we're ready to take questions or inputs. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Are they going to be presenting as well, or you say they would assist you in questions? Thank you very much. Honorable members, there's the presentation by the department tracing the history of the mining charter, the review that has been conducted, and the amended version of the mining charter. Let me open the floor to yourselves to ask questions, make comments on the presentation by the department. I note Honorable Schmidt. I note Honorable Njobo, Honorable Bigani, Honorable Sonto.
Mr. Chair, I'm burning to ask a question, but I'm not sure whether we're going to get through this schedule if we are going to interact with every presentation. We're already running behind schedule, and the interaction normally takes another half an hour. but I would rather request you to let the question stand over. But if you want to, you know, I'm willing and more than able to ask a question, but I'm just worried that we were not going to get through our schedule. But it's up to you. I mean, it's
well, as you see in the program, we provided 30 minutes for each entity, 20 minutes presentation and 10 minutes in terms of engagement. So let's keep it in that way, because you may lose some of the valid information that has been provided for.
Can I then ask, make myself guilty of my, but can I then ask, the validity of the figures which were quoted by the department depends on the services of an independent service provider. Now my question is basically, what's the guarantee that those figures are correct? In other words, what kind of consultation was there with the private sector, the mines? Because I can appoint any so-called independent service provider to give me a figure. My figure might be different from your figure, might be different from someone else's figure. Now, I'm not saying the figure is wrong, I'm not saying the figure is right, I'm saying, is there any guarantee that those figures are acceptable to all parties, whether it's the department, whether it's the ministry, whether it's the mines? That's my question. What guarantees do we have that figure is correct?
Thank you very much. Please note these questions. Honorable Mjobo.
Thank you, Chakasi. I want just a clarity on page 7, the housing and living condition, that 26% of companies have provided housing for their employees, and the 29% improved existing standard of housing. Then on page 19, the housing and living conditions, companies to implement measures to improve standard of housing. Again, that's the clarity. Page 7 and page 9.
There's been difficulty in hearing you. Can you pull the mic closer to you? Thank you.
Okay. On page 7, Chairperson, housing and living conditions. 26% of companies have provided housing for their employees. 29% improve existing standard of housing. Again, on page 19, housing and living conditions, companies to implement measures to improve standard of housing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Bigani.
Thank you, Monique. On page 3. But Andrew sounded very depressed when he was presenting this. It's as if he was suspicious about something. I wonder what. On page 3, the scorecard. Do you mind detailing what were the specific changes that were made in relation to the scorecard? And what impact has that had thus far, if you have started implementing the new scorecard? Then page 13, on your social funding, the use of the social fund, have you already perhaps put out, do you already have a drawn-out plan as to how that funding will be utilized? And since the inception of DMR, and knowing that there are social responsibilities in relation to what needs to be carried out as roles and functions, is there any progress that has been made? Then, page 16. I don't know if perhaps my understanding is not quite correct. I see the targets that you are setting there in terms of the demographics that have to be followed and the investment that has to be made out of annual payrolls. But you know for a fact that in the Public Service, the Skills Development Act is already being implemented. Where are you at this stage? Beyond the fact that it's part of the changes that have to come in with the new charter, but what has been done thus far? Because I'm just looking at, I was assessing the percentages that you're targeting yourselves with, and it appears to be slow. I might be wrong, but they appear to be low and slow targets that are set there. If you consider that you're only taking it from 2010, but what has been happening then in the meantime? Because the act is from way back, 94. Yeah, I think for now that's all, Shepherd.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sonto.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I have got one cross-cutting question. The MPRDA, with its shortcomings, the mining charter, with its good intentions, are tools that are designed to make it possible for us to address prevalent anomalies in the mining sector. Yet your presentation is telling us that up to this point, little progress has been made. What can you attribute that to? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tindo.
Thanks, Chair. on the reviewed mining charter, are there any results, or is it still a concept document? Has it been implemented already? And according to the MPRDA, all companies are supposed to be to report to the department. Is there any capacity or shortage of capacity in the department to make a follow-up to all these companies? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think that's all questions from the honorable members. Let's get to, so that we give you all the questions and then you can respond in bulk. Starting from page 12, just a general statement. I think the picture that you have depicted here in terms of the assessment results is indeed a picture that is not good looking, to say the least. Now, over the period of 5 years, let's look at the amended version of the charter. You're saying that there is a commitment that by 2014, in terms of the ownership patterns, you're seeking to achieve 26% ownership by the historically disadvantaged South Africans. How feasible is that, given the fact that over the previous 5 years, 2004 to 2009, your results are showing that only a mere 9% instead of the 15% that was envisaged was achieved. And you are indicating also that the other experts in the industry are basically estimating this to be less than even 9%, bordering in the region of about 5%. Surely, that does not represent movement in terms of changing ownership patterns in the mining industry. Now, the question therefore begs,
what is it that you have put in place that ensures that these targets are met this time around, and so that you avoid, you know, basically chasing moving targets, because the 15% was not achieved in 2009, and now we're talking 26%, which of course was originally there in the 2009 version, but the performance of the mining industry has been dismal in this instant. When you look at procurement, you're setting quite also very important targets here, that by 2014, 40% of capital goods and so forth. What is the current situation? What is the current picture? How much of capital goods are procured from formerly disadvantaged South Africans? How much of services are procured from those in consumer goods? And can you quantify for us what is it that we are looking at? How much is this procurement? How much does it worth? You know, so that we can understand the percentages that you are targeting, but at the same time understand the movement that has been there. In quantifying the procurement spend currently, please give us also the percentages that go to the formerly disadvantaged, you know, South Africans as we speak today. On beneficiation, I think it's still early days because the beneficiation strategy has just been adopted by Cabinet, and we are dealing with it as Parliament. In fact, within the month of September, we will be conducting public hearings on the beneficiation strategy. So I would not ask you too much, even though it was provided for way back in 2002 in the MPRDA, as you are pointing out here in terms of Section 26. On employment equity, are these targets that you have set here in line, for example, with other targets that you would find in the broader regime within government in terms of, for instance, the DTI codes? Are we talking the same language as DMR to that of the broader BEE arrangement that is located within DTI, so that we can then have a sense of government departments working together? And also, let's ask these pertinent questions in terms of where are we? In terms of your report, you are indicating a slow movement. But we note that there have been public statements by players in the industry that there has been a tendency within the industry of focusing, over-focusing, shall I say, to the employment and deployment into positions of responsibilities of white women. Can you speak to that in terms of your results? You know, is that picture a proper picture that you have found, or is that picture a picture that is an imagination, figment of imagination by those that have made those comments? And I think the question has been asked in terms of the human resources development. Let's look at how this fund is going to be managed, because you've got sitters in this country which have got serious funding at their disposal. But from time to time, at every financial year, there has been rollovers. Now, how are you looking at managing and dispersing this fund so that we deal critically with the issue of the skill shortages within the industry? For example, are you in partnership with the institutions of learning so that they can then absorb as many, you know, students as it is possible? And also, what is the arrangement of the in-house training by companies themselves? Because skills development is not only a function of the institutions of higher learning, but also in-house training arrangements within the mining industry have in the past demonstrated that you are able to produce, you know, for instance, artisans, starting them from assistant artisans through to becoming fully fledged artisans through knowledge accumulation and experience acquisition. The mine community development. This is a matter that, honourable members, I want to add my voice to what they have asked in terms of the contribution of the mining industry to the mine communities. For when we do oversights, when we conduct oversights, we come back depressed, because before you get you enter into a mine, you walk through a sea of poverty. Immediately, the first impression that you get is that there is poverty that is surrounding this mine. And in your investigation, why was that case? You are making reference to social and labor plans. We've discovered that in our own practical experience, that those social and labor plans are indeed not implemented. And when we engage mining communities, they lament that here, closer to us, within our area, we extract the wealth of the country. But there's no drop that comes back to us as the mining community. Now, in which best manner did you make provisions so that we can strengthen the implementation of the social and labor plans? Would you care to answer to those questions in the meantime? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I omitted to mention in my closing remarks that the amended charter came about as a result of a lot of good work that was done between the tripartite alliance. It was not always a rosy relationship, but we managed to put aside a lot of egos and we got down to the task at hand and managed to come up with a document that broadly represented what industries, labor, and the department felt would be good for the nation, and the mining sector. Having said that, I just thought I should just mention that. Now we're going to get into the questions. The question by the Honourable Smith on whether the stats that was provided for by the independent consultant that we appointed. Independent studies normally are very, it's not an exact science. But what we did as the department, we made sure that our a staff from mineral regulation went out and did a kind of a further assessment, looking at the companies that were assessed by the consultant, and ensure and looked at ways of corroborating the information that was supplied to the department. The consultant was not did not conduct the study for its own on its own. It was done in consultation with the department and with the assistance of the officials in the various regions to ensure that the results and the report was as accurate under the circumstances as it could be. There are various other reports done by a lot of other consultants who give totally different figures. You know, as the chairperson has already alluded to, who said, especially on ownership, that figure is given at below 5%. Studies will always give different figures, and I don't think the study that was undertaken by the department with the consultant is any different. My colleagues that are with me will speak to some of the other issues. I think it necessary to point out the clarity sought by the Honourable Jobo in relation to the targets given by my slide on slide 19, housing and living conditions standard, and the slide 7. Those percentages given on slide 7 simply depict the current state, the assessment. They speak to the percentages that was uncovered by the study that was undertaken by the consultant. The slide on 19 simply sets the new targets in what we're looking for companies to comply with by 2014. I don't know if that clarifies the issue. Okay. The scorecard, we didn't go into much detail, but the primary difference with the new scorecard in the amended charter, the old scorecard simply had a yes and no. You simply had to tick whether you complied, yes, no, and you submit that to the department. Now, if you look at the new scorecard in the amended charter, there's a lot of detail that needs that the right holder needs to submit to the department. How far the right holder has gone in achieving a specific target on an annual basis, you'll see it's broken down into 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014. There's a weighting, there's a column that makes provision for weighting, which means if you perform very well on a specific element and badly on another element, that will affect your weighting at the end of the day. The weighting will be out of 100. So it's a much more detailed scorecard as opposed to the scorecard that was used previously. It also speaks to the demographics that the chairperson spoke to under employment equity, where there's further columns in terms of there's a column that specifically deals with white women, females, males, black, Indian, coloured. All those the demographics are reflected there, and as a right holder, you are to reflect where you are in terms of your company, in terms of meeting the targets that are set by the mining charter. It's early days to assess the impact, Chairperson, because you will recall that the charter was amended last year. End of June 2011 was the date in which companies had to submit their first reports in terms of the amended charter. The branch mineral regulation is currently assessing the reports that they've received. I must say there's been a tremendous response by mining companies in terms of the inquiries that have been directed towards the department for them to submit their reports. I'm not so sure as to whether it's a Section 47 requirement provision, but it might be just that they feel that they need to comply with the amended mining charter, because the two branches, policy as well as mineral regulation, has seen an upswing in companies who want to comply with the provisions of the mining charter and ensure that they are not found wanting in terms of compliance. In as far as the social fund is concerned, that multinationals need to pay in a percentage of their total annual revenue. We have a task team that's looking at the modalities in terms of what the fund would concentrate on, in consultation with the various stakeholders, to ensure that the fund is not settled or held back by red tape, but actually is able to respond to the needs and concerns that have been raised timelessly by mine communities, and so that the fund can be set up in such a way that they can respond within a short turnaround time to the issues that have been mentioned in great detail by the chair and other members present. The skills development targets, those targets, Chairperson, are in addition to the levy that mining companies pay. Those contributions will not be paid. The percentages that are outlined there will not be paid to the department. The companies are supposed to utilize that percentage on an annual basis to train their employees. It's not being paid into a fund. So the percentage set out there, it's in-house training that will be conducted by the companies themselves. It's not paid into a fund. Okay. Honorable Sonto, asked the question about the shortcomings of the mining charter and the MPRDA, whether the tools are effective in terms of ensuring that we see a greater compliance with the mining charter and the Act. As I already pointed out earlier, that although the charter came into effect in 2004, the amended version is relatively new in that it took effect in September 2010. So I'm not so sure whether we are at this stage in a position to maybe speak in terms of its effectiveness or whether it will lead to greater compliance by the industry. But as I said previously, we have seen an upswing in mining companies wanting to comply with the charter. Only time will tell in terms of the reports that they're sending through, whether there is progress made. We're hoping that with the reviewed and possibly the amendments that we intend bringing to the MPRDA, that will also give impetus to ensuring that companies actually comply with the charter. If we beef up the penalty provisions by ensuring, you know, so that the penalty provisions can serve as a greater deterrent to mining companies to ensure that they actually comply with the mining regulatory framework. The ownership targets, Chair, the 26%. I think if you look at the new provisions under ownership, you will see that we've tried a great deal to make provision for permit offsetting in terms of beneficiation. The modalities, we are still busy looking at that. We do take your concern that the previous target of 15% was not met, and I suppose it will be difficult for us now to make out a case and say that the 26% target will be met by 2014. If you look at the new provisions of the ownership, we try to counter that by merging that with the priorities of government, which is to create jobs, and seeing if we can't bring in a beneficiation as a catalyst to move towards job creation, and thereby while not wanting to dilute the ownership target, but thereby ensuring that we look at it from a more broader perspective. I don't know if there are colleagues that want to add on this, I will afford my colleagues an opportunity to speak to the other issues that I've maybe not dealt with in my responses. The employment equity, whether it's in line with the DTI codes, Chairperson will know that the mining sector, while not opposed to the DTI codes, have developed codes of good practice as well as the mining charter and the housing and living conditions standard. They might not be aligned to the DTI codes, but I suppose most of the concepts and provisions have to a large extent to a certain extent been provided for in the codes that we use. There are certain concepts that are defined differently in the mining sector documents as opposed to the codes that are administered by the DTI. Those concepts are well known, I suppose, to this committee. I've already indicated that in terms of HRD, the management of the funds set aside by the various companies, that will be the responsibility of the companies itself to ensure that they train the employees utilizing that percentage that is so set aside. I will afford my colleagues from Mineral Regulation maybe to speak to the issues on SLPs as well as the conditions that mine communities find themselves in. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Let them do so. Who's going to speak? Over to you, Madam.
Okay, thanks, ma'am. I will talk to procurement. In terms of procurement, what we've realized as the department, is that this area of procurement, as the department, we haven't been previously assessing it robustly as we need to. Because what we found is that, in terms of the study, again, that was done, unfortunately, we use consultants, but in this case, we also verified through our inspections It might not be exactly the percentage that I will give here. But the stat indicated that above 199 billion of total procurement spent, what is accounted for HTSA controlled companies or PE controlled is less than 3%.
Above how much?
199. That was the stat that we got from our consultant.
199 billion
yes.
per year, per annum.
Per annum, sir. And what we've done, we've called all the most of the mining companies, the big ones, to do some procurement assessment workshops. And indeed, in terms of what, irrespective, I won't have exact numbers, but what we've realized is that what is accounted for black companies is less compared to non-black companies. Now, as a department, we are also, if you'll remember, in terms of our scorecard, we didn't have these targets and whatever. Now we've got targets. And we are in a process of also making sure that everyone understands, and because this element was a closed element within the industry that you will feel that when you try to engage, it's not the element that, unlike your LEDs and whatever, it was an element that you'll find that they were not used to, let me put it like that. But with that as it may, through our workshops now, and we are doing Indaba so that everybody, we can give platform to suppliers, because suppliers are complaining that they are not given an opportunity, the black suppliers, by the mining companies. There were challenges that were indicated by mining companies to say that, look, when we find black-controlled companies, in terms of the credit records, the financial viability, they don't have that. And also there were challenges that were indicated by HTSA that we are not given opportunity to participate. We are always told that we don't have experience and all those. But with that as it may, through these procurement endeavors that we are currently engaging on as the department in all the regional provinces, in all the provinces, we are hoping to achieve the figures that we've set. We've got our figures in terms of our strategic planning that let's have new entrants. It's indicated, and we are going to achieve, because we are doing now some workshops. We are doing also, we are creating platforms so that mining companies tend to meet with suppliers, because there was not that platform before. So we are creating such a platform that they meet, also making sure that, because another challenge was that most of the PE companies are not having skills, especially on your capital goods. The skill, I'm not saying everyone, but most of the companies, they didn't have the necessary skills. Now the mining companies have agreed to take them through. Remember, there's enterprise development that can give you an opportunity to participate in procurement. They've agreed that they are going to skill the companies that are entering this, especially the new entrants, because we don't want to see same names appearing every time without giving the others the new chance, the new entrance. So there is a drive for transformation that we need to approach it robustly. I think I'm done with procurement. I'll just comment on LED projects that
you're done with that, but you did not indicate to us in terms of what did your study show. Plus minus, how much percentage of the procurement spend is through formerly disadvantaged South Africans? Can you give us an indication?
Chairperson, I indicated it's less than 3% out of that, yes. Yes, I've indicated. Yes, the last time we've done our study. That's why I was saying these are the programs now that we are doing to make sure that the black suppliers are given an opportunity to participate in that at that level. The LEDs, the projects that are on the social and labor plan. I think honourable members will remember that we've been doing inspection robustly so in the mining companies to check the progress. It has indeed unveiled that most of the plans that we've approved, the companies, others have not implemented. But I don't want to paint a very negative picture here. Again, other companies have done, others have exceeded beyond. The only thing now as the department, we are intensifying our inspections so that we know that we need to inspect, because there are those ones that perhaps are not willing to move before there's someone who's monitoring them. So as the department, we've intensified that. We are doing inspections all over. We are doing unannounced inspections. We are doing planned inspections, all those. Because we've realized also that the companies have committed on projects, but they are not implementing. But another area is that as the department, we are also encouraging the collaborative approach, because it doesn't help us to agree on individual projects that are not going to make any impact. That's why perhaps the communities won't feel anything, because these are just small projects that are not done by mining companies around that area that will come together. I'm not sure whether it's the spirit of competition or whatever by the mining companies, but we've said to them, let's bring these projects together so that at the end of the day, the communities where you are operating can be able to feel an impact at the end of the day, the legacy, and also are able to feel some benefits out of the project. So we are doing that collaboration of projects so that at the end of the day, there is an impact and we're able to showcase those kind of projects. Thank you, madam.
Just a quick follow-up. Just to require, what do you do about companies that are resistant to your constant monitoring?
Okay. Honorable Khululu and then Honorable Bigani.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just wanted to complain about this aircon, otherwise you are going to get sick, really. My back is very cold now, otherwise I'll start coughing. You know, I've got a follow-up on that one. Actually, my colleague here has asked that question, but I want to put it in a slightly different manner, in that, you see, there are those companies that are not complying, as he correctly puts it. What are those punitive measures that you have in place, I mean, to punish those companies that are not complying? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Bigani.
Chairperson, maybe we're not really excited about this hearing today, but something is not nice about... There's a dead excitement concerning the charter.
You see, when you deal with a very important matter such as this, you need that calmness, you need that cool approach.
Even if you are dodgy. Anyway, Chairperson, my comment in relation to the presentation, it's fine, we can see it, but I think, I don't know, maybe my expectation is too high in terms of what you expected out of the charter. The very fact of the amendment was implicating that there were problems or there were challenges that perhaps the department was facing to be able to implement this charter. Now, from what we have and the explanations that are being given, they are heard, and also taking into consideration the period of existence of DMR as a department, it's pretty new. We understand that there would be no achievements. But I seriously have a problem with some of the explanations that are given here. It doesn't seem that there is an excitement or acknowledgement to a breakthrough in terms of what was previously to their disadvantage or what was previously expected out of the charter which has been done now. I'm saying this, Chair, because if you look at some of the issues that are in the charter, if I can give but one example of women participation in mining, where there was a slow progress in terms of the percentage, where the previous charter, it was mentioned that the results revealed that only 26% of mining companies have complied with the 10% women, inclusive of white women, participation in mining. And then you come to the charter itself, and where in the area where the amendments have been done, there doesn't seem to be much indication of where they'll be having a bigger drive in being able to implement some of the difficulties that they're experiencing. I'm looking also at the Gazette on the housing and living condition standards for South Africans in the mining areas. Even there, you even mentioned it earlier that it's a poverty-stricken area. The Department of Housing, for example, there should be a relationship between the minister and housing where there's an indication that there's specific targeting to improving the living conditions in mines. But you don't get the sense that due to the amendment of this charter, there can now be more robust movement in terms of improving the living conditions in terms of housing, for example. So I don't know, but for some reason or the other, we're very somber today. It does seem as though there's something not quite right about this charter, and I'm even starting to wonder if we should be happy about the progress we would have made after this engagement. Let me just pause there, Chair, but there's something very somber about it that's not convincing, that the changes that were meant to be brought about are not really realistic and they are not worth implementing, because even DMR itself, every now and again, what should have been your responsibility? We understand that you are a regulator of the department, but what should be your responsibility in terms of ensuring that you meet certain conditions through inspections to the mining industry? You are not really visible that you are making that move because of the excitement of having made the changes in the charter.
Thank you very much. Would you like to react to those follow-up questions?
Maybe we should give Ms. Mabusela first to respond to Honorable Sondo's question first, then I'll just also cap a few other areas that were raised. I'll ask her first, and then you can go, then I'll come after you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. In terms of the MPRTA, Section 93 gives us some power to do suspensions, notices for a company that is not complying, and we've done that as the department. There were many companies that we found that in terms of, especially this area around social and labor plan and the environmental issues, we've issued Section 93. And then when you go to Section 47, it gives the minister the power to suspend or cancel the rights. We have not, in terms of Section 47, cancelled any right. But we've given the companies the chance to remedy the situation, and most of them, they've come back to us to remedy the situations, but we have not cancelled. So we have done something in terms of Section 93.
As a slap on the wrist. It's coming back to my earlier question, the question that I asked. Where do we, where does it go wrong? That's exactly where the crux of the matter is. As long as we are not being exemplary, making an example about one mining company that is reluctant to toe the line, then we're not going to get the kind of compliance that we need. I think that's why we miss it. That was a comment, Chairperson.
Okay. Chair.
Yes?
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Honorable Santo. I think the point is made very, very succinctly. I think with the move now by the department, looking at ensuring that we play a greater enforcement role, inspections, I think we are likely to get the action that has now been referred to by the Honorable Sonto, where we will look at maybe enforcing the provisions that are in the MPRDA. I've also made mention in my presentation, we're also looking at enhancing the punitive measures, because the current penalties that are there simply do not serve as a deterrent. We talk 100, 200,000 rand there, which is not much. I did indicate that we are looking at increasing those maybe to a certain percentage of a company's total annual turnover, which would be, in the department's view, serve as a deterrent to ensure that we get companies to comply. I just want to respond to the honourable members. The other issue I want to deal with is the issue on housing and living conditions standard that's also made provision for in Section 100. If you look at the provisions, the Minister of Mineral Resources must consult with the Minister of Housing when developing the housing and living conditions standard, which is something that we did do in trying to address not only the housing issues that are prevalent in mine communities, but the greater challenge relating to housing in the communities at large. I spoke about the punitive measures, the participation of women. What the older charter did was make specific reference to certain groupings within the mining sector. What the amended charter tries to achieve is to have a more collective approach and have it under one grouping where we say previously disadvantaged South Africans instead of making provision for women, youth, and all the other groupings such as disabled persons. We simply say previously disadvantaged persons to ensure that we adequately cater for all those groupings instead of singling out one specific group when referring to these various provisions that will empower previously disadvantaged persons. I think that those are the issues that I wanted to touch on. I will give my Mr. Nell an opportunity to address some of the issues that I omitted. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I would like to make the remark that it has been quite a long and arduous road to come to this point, and we are very aware that we have not really reached to the targets that we had set out as of the time when the MPRD was promulgated and the charters came and the review that we have had. And especially I'm responding more on the side of the punitive measures, and as my colleague has just illustrated earlier on, we are always torn between, you know, enforcing that, for example, the Section 47 in terms of taking away the mining rights, etc. And the challenge would be that at the same time, whilst we are imposing these punitive measures, we end up also harming other players in the industry. For example, if you take a mining right from a particular major mining company, the employees are going to be laid off, etc. And sometimes it's also even in the case of our own BEEs who are part and parcel of the industry. In a way, they would also, perhaps on behalf of their organization, plead that let's be soft on them. But I think of recent, starting from 2008 onwards, we have been talking together with the mining industry, the trade unions. We have been trying to hear each other well on some of these issues, and we have created a platform where we are beginning to get buy-in from the major mining industries to try and turn around this situation and implement the MPRD to its full course. Because yes, we know we keep on reviewing, amending, etc., but at the end of the day, it's about the willingness to participate and make a difference to the lives and of our people here. So, for example, let me also highlight, I think the ladies did speak to some other interventions that, from our point of view as government, are quite encouraging. Some other major companies, they are strong on enterprise development and have in sometimes exceeded expectations in terms of grooming up or mentoring some of these emerging black suppliers and to enhance procurement. But again, it's true negotiation and discussing and see where can we meet. And of recent, perhaps because of the lot of discussions out there in the public domain about saying, yes, the mining companies have not really been coming to the table in terms of really ensuring that we do have an experienced transformation in the country. And hearing the debate and discourse out there, they are beginning to realize that if we don't come and work together or try and address some of these development deficits we experience in terms of underdeveloped communities, unemployment, the job creation issue, then we are just doing a recipe for social instability. So what I think we can do here, or ask the House here, is to try and perhaps and give us that moral support to really go all the way to implement the laws as they are, because we are also done in by some of our people that we expect out there in the industry to be proactive within these companies, that is those people who have been empowered at executive management, executive leadership, to try and get the message through that we all need to work together in this, in terms of making a success of this law, MPRD, which is a very benign law compared to other countries who have our major mining jurisdictions. I mean, we at times put ourselves at that level with the Brazils, the Russias of this world, the Indias of this world. But in terms of what we are doing, in terms of enforcing the national interest, we seem to be not going full steam ahead. So with these remarks, I will just leave it here. And I think what we'll do as a technical team here, we will go again back to the point in terms of looking at strengthening the compliance issue. Yes, I think we cannot deny it. We have a challenge in terms of the capacity to enforce compliance, in the sense of the warm bodies or even the technical expertise. We can even cite an example where how difficult it is sometimes to really enforce compliance. Let's say, for example, we go through the mine due to a safety issue, etc. The mining companies will come back to us and say, you guys, you know, let's not close the whole mine. Let's just perhaps close a part of the mine which is not critical to the production. So we have to negotiate those sort of things from time to time. But I think as we enforce the culture of compliance, we will be able to perhaps arrive where we would like to be. With those comments, Honorable Chairperson, I would like to stop here. And the other colleagues can add in who are accompanying us here if there's other areas that I may not have covered. Let me just leave it here.
Yes, Chair, thank you. Thank you, Chair. I think I've omitted to indicate that the question around women, if you look at the provisions of the amended mining charter, in fact, it goes further than the 10% previously made provision for. As we all know, that women are in the majority in South Africa. Their percentage is currently put roughly at around 51-52%. What the amended charter now says is that we will give effect to the demographics of the country, meaning that you will find more women being in positions of management. So because of the demographics, so that 10% is in fact dealt with decisively by the provision in the mining charter that says the provisions of each element will give effect to the demographics of the country, which will then far exceed the 10% that was previously made provision for in the mining charter. Thank you. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think, Honourable Members, we are done with the with DMR, and let's thank you very much for the presentation as well as the interaction. I think you would read from the questions and comments coming from members that not all is well. Not all is well. We would expect that as a department, as you have been
trying your level best to put more effort in terms of ensuring that there is compliance. You see, these matters are very important in that if we do not address them, since I became involved in the mining industry, we kept on raising this matter that events will overtake us if we do not address these challenges in the mining industry. And that's the same message that I think we need to put across today, that as you're talking about building capacity in terms of enforcing compliance, it's a matter that we will watch very closely so that there is that, some of these things do not require negotiations, do not require debates. For instance, look at the issue of the hostels in the mining industry. That's one of the remnants of the apartheid regime laws, where mining companies were forced to put up hostels so that they can house their workers. It was a condition imposed to them. Now, in dealing with redressing the imbalances of the past, it's an issue that mining companies, as they so willingly complied with those orders then, that they must comply without engagements, without dilly-dallying on the issue. You're dealing with a seriously inhumane situation where you bundle men. 12 men, the last I knew, I don't know now whether figures are at 6 or figures are at 4, in one room and basically putting them into conditions that are inhumane, conditions that also have other social impacts, such as the spread of the HIV/AIDS pandemic, you know, in the industry. So some of these matters do not need a discussion. They just require that companies must implement, department must enforce implementation. If not, drastic measures must be taken and the case closed. Otherwise, if we go around in this fashion, we might find ourselves being behind time and overtaken. You know, this matter, overtaken by events. And it's a reality in the mining industry. It's beginning to happen as we speak. So we need to pay that attention. Thank you very much. Honorable members, let's take, is the theory? Okay. Let's listen to Business Unity South Africa, or maybe whilst they are setting up, let's check if the tea is ready outside. And is it there? Okay. Let's allow